Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is for the translation commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to read from the fifth chapter, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. This is text number 18. Do we need any translators? Vidyavanaya sampane
Vidyavanaya sampane
Brahmane gavi hastini
Brahmane gavi hastini
Shuni chaiva shabhake cha Pandita samadarshana
Pandita samadarshana
Vidyavinaya sampane
Vidyavinaya sampane
Brahmane gavi hastini
Brahmane gavi hastini
Shuni chaiva Shapake cha Pandita samadarshana
Pandita samadarshana
Vidya
with education
Vinaya
and gentleness
Sampane
fully equipped
Brahmane
in the
Brahmana Gavi
in the cow
Hastini
in the elephant
Shuni
in the dog
Cha
and
Eva
certainly
Shwapake
in the dog eater
the outcast
Cha
respectively
Pandita
those who are wise
Samadarshinaha
who see with equal vision. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Purport. A Krishna-conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. Brahmana and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog or a cow and an elephant may be different from the point of view of species, but these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to their relationship to the Supreme, for the Supreme Lord by His plenary portion as Paramatma is present in everyone's heart. Such an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned, in different castes or different species of life, the Lord is equally kind to everyone because He treats every living entity as a friend yet maintains Himself as Paramatma regardless of the circumstances of the living entities. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in the outcast and in the Brahmana, although the body of a Brahmana and that of an outcast are not the same. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature. The soul and the supersoul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the supersoul, however, does not make them equal in quantity. The individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna-conscious person has full knowledge of this. Therefore, he is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and the supersoul are that they are both conscious, eternal, and blissful, but the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the supersoul is conscious of all bodies. The supersoul is present in all bodies without distinction. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmane gavihastane shune jaiva prabhakecha pandita samadarshanaha. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Budai Shri Mataye Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Kauravani Bajarne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Deya Siddharna.
Nice to be here in Cologne. See so many devotees here. This fifth chapter is a vision of a self-realized person. And here it says that the self-realized person sees everyone as a spirit soul, and at the same time sees within everyone the super soul. This is not simply a theoretical philosophy. This is actually reality. Any one of us can understand that everyone has a body, and everyone's body is changing. But in spite of all the changes of the bodies that every living entity is going through, in every species of life, everywhere in this universe, the soul within every body is always remaining the same, because we all have practical experience of that. In the sixth chapter, Krishna says, Atmo Pamyena Sarvatra Sukham. Samam Pashati Arjuna. Atmo Pamyena Sarvatra Samam Pashati Arjuna Sukham Vayiri Vadukam Siyogi Paramo Mataha. That he is a true yogi, or as Arjuna, who can see the true quality of all living entities, both in their happiness and their distress, by his own experience. In other words, first of all, we have to be Krishna conscious, and then we can understand things by our own experience. And the first thing we can understand, because we can perceive it directly, is that I have a body, and my body's changing, but I within the body am always the same person. And that's not only true for me, but it's true for every living entity. Everyone here, everyone who's not here, is in the same situation. And in every body, if we think carefully, or if we just read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can discover that there is a director of everyone, that there is someone within me, he's directing me. Whether I like it or not, I'm dependent on his mercy. Unless he gives me intelligence, I can't do anything. Intelligence may be very subtle, but sometimes we can see that we don't have it, a sufficient amount of it, and we do the wrong things, and sometimes effortlessly we seem to have a lot of it, and we seem to do the right things. Therefore, intelligence is not simply a product of coming from ourselves, although we ourselves have our own type of, our own intelligence, but intelligence is also directing us, just like a father directs the son, or a student is directed by the teacher. So that intelligence is all-pervading. Every living entity has that intelligence, and that intelligence is Paramatma. Therefore, with a little thoughtfulness, we can understand that I am a soul, everyone else is a soul. Paramatma is directing me, Paramatma is directing everyone else. But the reason why we don't fully realize it is because we don't take complete shelter of Paramatma. In other words, Paramatma, by taking shelter of Paramatma, these things are very simple to understand. And when we don't take shelter of Paramatma, it's practically impossible to understand these things. And even if we understand these things, Maya is so strong, we won't know what to do. Or we won't even accept it. I was on book distribution in Maastricht a couple of days ago. And, as usual, once in a while, just for some enlightenment, besides trying to sell books, sometimes we stop people one or two people during the day, or whenever, because we're not out there that long, but one or two people, just to talk to them. Even if they don't want to buy a book. Usually I don't talk to people very long, unless they want to do some service. But and invariably you explain, the person says, I'm not interested in the book, which is the best time to make as much distance between yourself and the person as possible. Because all you're going to generally do is waste your time. So the person says, I'm not interested in the book. But sometimes, even if a person stops, you know, then you know somehow or another they have some qualification. At least they stopped to tell you they weren't interested. Most people don't even want to stop to tell you they're not interested. In any case, so I gave him the book and I told him, well, you know, actually, he said, I'm not interested in the book. Well, I said, well, you know, this is actually very important philosophy for our own happiness. That basically everyone has only three objectives in life. Everyone wants to know how to become as happy as possible for as long as possible. He said, I agree with that, but I'm not interested in your book. And so, and I said, well, actually, it tells you how to become happy. It tells you the difference between matter and spirit. So he heard the whole philosophy, agreed with everything, but he wouldn't take a book. So that's called Maya. People understand Paramatma. They get all the intelligence coming from Paramatma, but they can't see anything. Pashyana pina pashyati. They simply take pride in how intelligent they are. They think they're the source of intelligence. Therefore, they're not interested because they think, well, just see how intelligent I am. I don't need anyone. They have no conception that actually intelligence is coming from others. They think it's only coming from themselves. They have no perception of their dependence on any other living entity besides what they think is themselves. So that's Maya. They say, well, I have my opinion. They don't realize they have no opinion. All they do is everyone else's opinion. That's what they have. But they actually have no opinion, practically speaking, of their own. Whatever their mother told them, their father told them, their friends told them, their teachers told them, the television is telling them, whatever the newspapers tell them, whatever the internet tells them, whatever the person down the block tells them, that's their opinion. And they think, I have my opinion, I'm independent. I don't need any book. So this is because people have lack of understanding and because they're not submissive, because they want to remain thinking themselves independent. Therefore, they can't really hear. Even they hear the truth, still they just assimilate it in such a way as it reconfirms within themselves, just see how intelligent I am. I knew all these things. But in any case, well, we're trying to see, come to this platform of seeing everyone equally. But the way of seeing everyone equally is to see Krishna along with everyone else. Although people in this material world, we're all fools here. That we're all being fooled by Maya, at least, by the illusory energy. And therefore, we see things in so many different ways. Although we may perceive sometimes the reality how everyone is actually Krishna's servant, but what that means practically, that we can't understand until we actually come to the full platform of Krishna consciousness. How dear, as it says here, that Krishna is accompanying everyone because he's the Saritsatam, because he's the dear friend of everyone. So although we may have our own considerations of who everyone we think they are, and generally we consider everyone according to their external feature, here's a nice person because they like me, here's a demoniac person because they don't like me. The demons, they should be glorified, and the demoniac, of course, should be destroyed. And Krishna confirms that, we think, in Bhagavad Gita, Tanaham Dvishita Koran, Samasration Naradamam, Shipram Yajasram Ashubam, Asri Shvena Yonishu. I take the demons and I throw them into the darkest regions of hell. And even if they try to make some progress, I just throw them further and further down so they can never approach me. Sounds like a nice person, doesn't it? Is that the same person who's at our altar, dancing so happily, throwing people into the darkest regions of hell? And at the same time, he claims he's a dear friend of everyone. So therefore, it takes a little consideration, a little thoughtfulness. It is not so simple. But of course, we have to have, first of all, direct faith, or faith, a direct understanding that I'm not this body, that I'm a spiritual soul, and then we can see that things are a little bit more complicated, in the sense that if I'm a spiritual soul, then how great is my illusion? Just like sometimes we wonder, how is it that the gopis, they understand Krishna as being Narayan, or being God, the controller of everything, but they treat him just like an ordinary coward boy. That's because they don't take, under Yoga Maya, they don't take it very seriously. He may be God, he may be anything, but after all, he's just really a coward boy when you really get down to it. Similarly, in the state of, under the spell of Mahamaya, we may say I'm a spiritual soul, Krishna is God, Paramatma, but when you get down to it, I'm still a body, aren't I? And a mind. Because it's hard for us to take things seriously under the spell of illusion. In any case, at least from that this theoretical viewpoint, that I'm a spiritual soul and Paramatma is within me as a guide, so we can make progress towards trying to understand something about Krishna and how to act in this world so we can actually become conscious of Krishna. So here it says that everyone is actually very dear to Krishna. So that makes life a lot easier. Rather than thinking the whole world is full of competitors against me, I have my allies, I have my competitors, my allies and myself, we get together and we fight against our competitors, we establish our supremacy, and after we establish our supremacy, then we fight against each other to see who's the last man or woman standing. And then we put up our flag, I'm God. I'm the controller. I did it. So what a future. America, with a few allies, is going to wipe out most of the world, the part of the world that doesn't agree with them, or exploit them until they finally crack and then they do something, then we wipe them out. Or we bombard them with television, and as we exploit them, we make them feel good about it. We convince them that actually they're doing the right thing. But what happens afterwards? Then afterwards, even if we could do that, then we'd simply fight with some, we'd find some other enemy. Because materialistic consciousness means we need friends and we need enemies. Practically speaking, Russia was the big enemy, but then when Russia decided not to become the big enemy for whatever reason, then we had to find some other enemy. Now the big enemy is terrorists. Of course, who is the real terrorist? That we have to consider also. Actually, the real terrorist ultimately is our own consciousness. That's who's actually terrorizing us, is our consciousness, is our state of being, state of awareness. Identifying with this body, identifying with this mind, identifying with all the misconceptions that we've accrued, that's what's really terrible. That's what's actually fearful. That's what puts us into anxiety. And who's helping us identify with these things? Who's blasting everywhere that you are the supreme because you're from America or Germany or some other exalted place on this earth? And therefore you were advented yourself on this planet just to establish your supremacy here. And the way you show your supremacy is you exploit everyone else, get the biggest house possible, get the biggest car, get the biggest everything. Even if everyone else has to suffer, just so that you can enjoy, don't worry about it. You're the supreme, and everyone's supposed to suffer so you can enjoy. Kill the animals, exploit other people, exploit the earth. Just keep on exploiting, and be happy about it. Because if the supreme is happy, everything is auspicious. So, who's advertising like that? Who's teaching like that? The whole world's teaching like that. The whole world's full of people who are terrorists, inflicting this horrible philosophy, this horrible lifestyle into everyone's consciousness so that they identify themselves more and more with their minds and their senses and creating more and more perverted intelligence, which is not beneficial for anyone. But here the simple philosophy is how to see within everyone that there's a soul. So this is revolutionary. Of course, theoretically many religions say like that, but Prabhupada said that the Christians, they say like that, but they don't mind. They don't even say like that. Their philosophers, St. Thomas Aquinas, he said, his philosophy, yes, men have a soul, and women or animals don't have a soul. And women, they have something in between. They're not quite a soul, and they're not an animal, but there's something in between. So, on this basis, the animals weren't very happy. The women weren't very happy. But the men who had souls, they were very happy. Happy about what? Didn't mind that with this philosophy, you can go and kill all the animals, exploit the women, but it's alright because you're not doing any harm. Because there's no soul to do any harm. There's no God in there. Why would God be unless the soul was there? So you're free to be God somewhere. And it's all sanctioned by religion, ultimately coming from God. So this is called illusion, commonly speaking. It's not reality. So even the so-called religions, their philosophy is just as bogus, for the most part, as everyone else's bogus philosophy. It's the same thing. How to exploit God's creation. How to exploit the living entities. How to see everything except the fact that everything belongs to Krishna, and that, including all the living entities, that nothing is moving, including every living entity, unless it's being moved by the will of Krishna. So only this very simple philosophy can actually solve the problems of life. Everyone else's philosophy is the same, more or less. It's the same philosophy of exploitation. Cheaters and the cheated. And there's nothing else practically going on in modern society, and they can't recognize that's why the problems are there. They can't figure out why we have so many problems. They can't figure it out because they don't take shelter of Krishna. They don't take shelter of even common sense. So here we have to, that's what we have to do. We have to learn how to see every living entity in relation to Krishna. That in everyone's heart is the super soul, the supreme Lord, and that Krishna is very dear to everyone. And everyone is very dear to Krishna. Well, we can say at least that to Krishna everyone is very dear. And he's trying to bring them back to the spiritual world. He's trying to help them. But because they don't want help, therefore Krishna is satisfying their perverted desires and making arrangements so that they can see ultimately that satisfying these perverted desires is not very auspicious. But we can see that it's a very long educational process. Most people have been flunking the first grade class since time immemorial. They don't seem to be doing much better in this try either. But Krishna is quite patient. Although people don't want to learn the lessons, and therefore they don't. But Krishna says, Vitaraga Vayakroda Manmaya Mamupashitya Bahava Jnana Tapasa Puta Bhadma Vam Agata. Being free from attachment and fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all obtained transcendental love from me. So, there are many people, living entities, they've graduated from the Course. They acknowledge that everything here is Krishna's property, and that they should act for Krishna to teach everyone that Krishna is their real friend, and that they should utilize whatever assets they have to serve him and become a servant of Krishna's servants. And those persons graduated and went back to the spiritual world, but those who we see in the material world now are all the people who didn't graduate, who are still in the Course. So that doesn't mean that we should dislike everyone. No, we have to learn how to appreciate that our mission here, if we want to be part of Krishna's family, then we have to recognize how everyone is actually part of Krishna's family, and therefore act accordingly. Instead of trying to become the master of the circumstances, we have to try and figure out how to become the servants of the circumstances. Servants of the circumstances, servants of Krishna in all circumstances, and ultimately, as we can see from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example, that he came here and he tried simply to distribute love for Krishna. Everyone else has come here trying to distribute love for themselves, and it doesn't work in the long run. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here, although he's Krishna himself, but him and his associates simply tried to distribute love for Krishna. And they were successful. And our success is to do the same thing. If we want to become conscious of Krishna, if we want to get Krishna's mercy, then we have to Yari Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Aigaya Guru Tara Kanatara Edesh. Whoever you meet, then you tell them about the science of Krishna consciousness. In this way, become a guru and liberate. Of course, that doesn't mean that we have to walk up to everyone and immediately tell them everything we know about Krishna. And even if they're running down the street, still we just run after them, telling them, shouting out, you know, that if you don't surrender to Krishna, then he's going to come and as time and take everything away from you. No, we have to appropriately tell everyone about Krishna so that they somehow or another become inspired to take up the process of Krishna consciousness. To use our intelligence means to rely upon Paramatma within the heart, give us the intelligence, what's necessary, in every circumstance to inspire ourselves and others to become conscious of Krishna. So this doesn't mean, just like when we're out on the street, when we're approaching someone with a book, now is the opportunity to preach about Krishna consciousness. No. At every moment we're supposed to be preachers of Krishna consciousness. It's just that book distribution may be book distribution may be an opportunity where we're more conscious of the fact that that's our duty. In other circumstances, we may have less experience or less of a tendency to think deeply what to do, what to say, how to act, how to think, so that I can actually do my service to Krishna and to Krishna's representatives in the disciplic succession. But actually, in every moment, in every circumstance, forever, that's how we're supposed to be thinking. Then if we do that, then Krishna says, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. In other words, Krishna will give us the intelligence how to make every relationship fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Dadati Prati Grinati Guyam Akiti Prichati Bhunte Vojayate Chaiva Shadvidam Prati Lakshana. Now, this loving exchanges between the devotees, this is the very foundation of our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Of course, that doesn't mean that we should simply go around and tell everyone, I love you, I love you. I love everyone. No, that's... We have to become expert also in how to reciprocate in loving exchanges. So it also takes some intelligence. Sometimes we think that intelligence and love, they're mutually contradictory. Especially in the pure world, if you use your intelligence, then your love goes away. Therefore, people think that love means that you shouldn't use your intelligence too much. After all, when you start examining things in the material world, from the material point of view, then things that you're in love with don't seem very lovable. And the Bhagavatam explains, you know, how these material bodies, you just take the skin off. The thing that you love so much, you take the skin off, and there's all kinds of things underneath, which are less than lovable. Just peel off 1/4 inch of skin and see how much the objects you worship and love, what it does for your devotion. Therefore, we don't think about those. If one is in the material consciousness, one tries not to think about those things very much. If there is an accident on the street, so people, you see everyone crowds around trying to see what a dead body looks like. Or see what part of the body is, you know, has been taken away, or trying to see something. Because people are so much, except in the movies nowadays, you know, people don't see these things. They think, oh, a body means, you know, a beautiful body, painted, decorated, cleansed, perfumed. You know, that's what a material body means. But, in other words, we'd rather be an illusion. We don't want to use our intelligence too deeply in the material world. Otherwise, all the fun goes away. If we thought that we're about to die, then all the fun would go away. Then people couldn't do what they're doing if they thought deeply about the consequences of what they're doing. But the spiritual life means that this intelligence will actually help us develop our love to the highest degree. Buddha yoga. The intelligence where we're able to discriminate in a positive way, be able to understand who to give our love to and how to do it, that type of intelligence will actually help us progress in devotional service and ultimately manifest our love to the highest degree. So that we can come to the same position as Krishna is on ultimately, or Krishna's most intimate associates, where we love everyone to the highest degree equally. Mahabhagavat. But in the meantime, we can't artificially imitate Mahabhagavats, but we have to learn the philosophy and then apply it in such a way as that our love and our enthusiasm increases. If after reading the philosophy, we start thinking that these people are demons, they deserve to go to hell, these are my friends because they, you know, and therefore, only in their association can I be happy. And everyone's associated. We have our friends in the movement. We have our enemies in the movement. There are good devotees. There are bad devotees. And if on the basis of all my philosophy and understanding, I'm sometimes happy and sometimes distressed, in certain association I'm enthusiastic, certain association I'm depressed, now that means I'm not very advanced in Krishna consciousness. And I haven't understood the philosophy very well. I haven't really developed very much expertise in relationships. Now ultimately, one who's very advanced in Krishna consciousness means that they appreciate everyone according to their service to Krishna, and ultimately they appreciate everyone at least as an eternal servant of Krishna, as a very dear servant of Krishna, and as someone that Krishna is trying to help bring back to the spiritual world. Someone, if I want to be a servant of Krishna's servants, if I want to be a servant of Krishna, then I should do my best to assist them. Maybe to the tiger in the zoo, I have to throw them a little prasadam and chant Hare Krishna, rather than, you know, enter into the cage and embrace him, touch his pores, and ask for forgiveness for all my offenses, considering that he was just an ordinary being, a tiger. No, it would not be very practical, unless you're something like Murari Chaitanya Das. He was such an advanced devotee, he could go into the forest and find tigers and slap their faces out of love. And the tigers would just purr. If we're not that advanced and we slap the faces of the tigers, we may find ourselves in great difficulty. He would put venomous serpents on his lap and play with them. And sometimes he'd remain underneath the water for 3 days and chant his rounds. Even if we're behind rounds, it's not recommended to try and do that. So we can't imitate the Mahabhagavats, the most advanced devotees, but we can try to hear their instructions as they, and then try to apply them. They give us instructions according to our particular circumstances, and if we try to apply them, then we can make progress towards the exalted position of a Mahabhagavat, where our loving propensity can expand spontaneously, unlimitedly, perpetually. Then we can actually enjoy life with no coming down, being depressed and anxiety. We're in anxiety, all because of our offenses, our relationships with others. Therefore, if we come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, all these anxieties and depressions, whatever else is bothering us, they go away. Because ultimately we realize that we're spirit souls, and that everyone's a spirit soul, and all this so-called gain and loss in the material world for myself and others is all part of a dream. The only thing to gain here is love for Krishna, and love for everyone and everything in relation with Krishna, and the only thing to lose is that. And we can see most people have lost that, and therefore they're losers. But our job is to, our service to Krishna, is to help them get it back. Their real wealth, not their dreaming wealth, the wealth that they're imagining that they have. So here it says that a learned person, he sees like that because of his full dedication to Krishna consciousness, and therefore Krishna gives such a devotee that vision so that one can work seriously to enlighten people in Krishna consciousness. That is our real job. Everything else is really secondary. We may have to work at some job. It's not that we should stop whatever we're service, whatever we're doing, but we have to see that is our primary objective, is to develop that consciousness in whatever we're doing. Then the material world makes sense, otherwise it's all nonsense. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Different groups see living entities in different ways. Devotees try to see living entities as individual spirit souls, but people like Maharanis, they see different maybe expensive ones.
Well, any way we want to see things, then Krishna gives us the intelligence to see them that way. Sadvana Rupa Sarvasha Shada Bhavati Bharata. According to one's existence under the three modes of material nature, one evolves a particular type of faith. According to that faith, one will act and he'll evolve another mode, set of modes of nature. Therefore, we're already looking out, we have a particular conception of life, and we're convinced that I see things as they are. And because we think we see things, we've already figured it all out, therefore we keep on acting the same way. And therefore it confirms whatever we thought was right. But that doesn't mean that it's right. It just, Maya is always giving us confirmations all the time that we are very intelligent. We do things, see things properly. So the Mayavadis or the materialists or the impersonalists or everyone is getting that inspiration coming from the illusory energy that they actually understand things properly. Only after we suffer enough in the material world that we actually become jignasu, a little inquisitive. Suffer enough means not that the only people eligible for pure devotional service are people who are suffering. But when we see that the material world is nothing but different varieties of suffering, sometimes less and sometimes more, and that there's a different scope of existence, of activities, then we can begin to change our conception due to hearing, accepting the fact that we don't know reality, and that it is to our advantage to enter into reality. Practically everyone else more or less thinks they've already understood everything. So we have to become a little humble and realize that we haven't understood things properly and that we should try and make progress towards reality. Then we can start hearing from those who actually have understood reality more than we have, if not from Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita or from personalities such as Srila Prabhupada, and then start judging our own particular state of awareness, our own particular thoughts and perceptions of things, conceptions of things, according to that standard, and then start to change them. And therefore change our activities and rely and pray to Krishna for the intelligence so that we can modify what we're doing so it becomes pleasing to Krishna and to the previous disciple succession. Then actually get Krishna's mercy so that what we try to understand theoretically becomes realized. Is that right? Anything else? Yes.
Mahimadikari, he is preaching, yeah? And Uttamadikari, he don't preach because he sees that everybody is serving Krishna, right?
That's one of the qualifications of Mahimadikari, is that he's a preacher.
And why is considered the stage of Uttamadikari better than the stage of Mahimadikari?
Krishna is preaching. We're not preachers. Krishna is the preacher. One should not think oneself to be a preacher. One should think oneself to be an instrument for Krishna. So, the second class devotee, one who's trying to come to the second class devotee platform. It's not that simply because I'm preaching, therefore I'm a second class devotee. No, that has something to do with my motivations and my understanding of what I'm preaching. Kanishtha Adhikaris can also preach, but their preaching won't be so effective. But Madhyama Adhikari knows, at least, that actually I'm not really, as Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Devotion, that a devotee should not think himself to be a great preacher, but simply trying to become an instrument for the predecessor acharyas. By doing so, one may be able to do some good for others. So the Madhyama Adhikari doesn't consider himself a great preacher, or even a preacher, simply an instrument for Krishna and the predecessor acharyas. Now, Uttama Adhikari is in so much love for Krishna that he thinks that there's no reason to preach to anyone because everyone's more advanced than he is. But that doesn't. But if Krishna wants an Uttama Adhikari to preach, he does it. So our objective is not to preach. That's really not our objective is prema pramartha mahat, is to develop love for Krishna, become a servant of Krishna. That's the best preaching, develop love for Krishna. Otherwise, to think I'm a preacher, I've come here to save everyone. We can't even save ourselves right now. We're just trying to get help from the predecessor acharyas so that we can become their instruments. And becoming their instruments, they may want us to preach. And even if we become on the topmost level, as long as they want us to preach, then we'll do that. So sometimes a first class devotee, for service, he comes down and he acts as a second class devotee. Because that's what his authorities want him to do. It's not that when we become first class means that you become independent. No, first class means you become completely dependent. But one who's preaching like that realizes that actually I'm not the preacher. Even I have disciples, the first class devotee, who's the best devotee, he realizes that actually my disciples, they're teaching me, they're not really my disciples in one sense, in the sense that actually I'm simply the servant of my spiritual master, and that he sent so many persons to come and help me. But by their service, since I'm just an instrument, I'm simply giving the knowledge and philosophy coming through the disciple succession, and by observing them, they're training me how to become a better servant to my spiritual master. When I see their service, I appreciate their service, and they train me how to become a better servant to my spiritual master. So although they're obviously, by their the etiquette is that they're serving my instructions, but actually by doing that, they train me how to become a better servant to my spiritual master. So the Uttamadhikari, he never considers himself that a preacher. He's simply an instrument. Even a Madhyamadhikari, he realizes, or the Uttamadhikari knows it. Even I've so-called come down to the second-class platform. But he has full knowledge of what his real position is and what's actually going on. He has full realization of it. Therefore, he becomes a perfect preacher. It's not that he loses anything by doing it. As Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda told our Prabhupāda, the Uttamadhikari has come down from what we think is a come down. And he was there enjoying with Krishna in the spiritual world. And Krishna said, go down and preach. And he goes, oh, I don't really want to do that. I want to go. No, you got to do it. And everyone got to make the sacrifice once in a while. Okay, I'll fall down for a while. I'll preach. No, it's not coming down to that platform. He doesn't come down from his Krishna consciousness, because it's just externally the activity is a little different. The mood is a little different, that's all. But he keeps the same mood. The first class devotee keeps the same mood. He doesn't really change the mood. Therefore, even he chastises his disciples, the first class devotee, but his mood doesn't change. Even he criticizes people, his mood doesn't change. It's all done out of love. Therefore, the first class devotee is the most effective preacher. Because he has the same mood as Krishna. When Krishna says, Svavitra hostra karar samstuta purusha pashu yakarna patiyo peta jatanam gada garja, that hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they, you know, follow big a hog, dog, camel, and ass, but they don't glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when the first class devotee preaches like that, it's still not out of envy, but out of actual love and concern for the hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, people who are like that. But the second class devotee may not be so effective in his preaching. People may notice a lack of realization, lack of loving feeling. And the third class devotee may actually take pleasure in criticizing people, calling them hogs and dogs, and feel rather good about it. You know. So then his people, obviously, who are hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, won't really appreciate that very much. They'll simply criticize the devotees that actually you got it wrong. You're the hog, dog, camel, and ass. So that won't be very helpful. For the first class devotee, because they never lose the vision of loving service to Krishna, and because they actually see everyone as a spirit, as a dear friend, or at least an eternal, they're the eternal servants of everyone, they're the loving servants of everyone. Therefore, they never lose that mood, even when they're preaching very strongly. Therefore, they're most effective. It's like Prabhupada. He's talking to one professor, the head actually of Wayne State University, and he's more or less calling him a fool. The Prabhupada said he liked it. Now we may think, well, that's great, just what I always wanted. And then we can invite some head of the university, and we sit him down, start telling him he's a fool. But because we don't have the realization, the loving feeling, the actual direct perception of the super soul and the soul is not there, because the bhava, the ecstasy, isn't there. Therefore, people will think, you know, you called me here just to insult me. How foolish. So we can't imitate Mahabharata. So even as preachers, we can't think, well, they descended to become a preacher, and they're preaching like this. This is what how we should preach also. So we have to be very careful that we preach appropriately, according to where what our actual realization is. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Prendraj, Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Shri Gauranitai, Ki Jai.